life. This world's gone crazy. Grandpa, take me back to yesterday, when the line between right and wrong didn't seem so hazy. Did love is really fall in love, she said. Let's stand beside each other, what they promise really something people can't, not just something they would say.
The reason I played that song is I got to thinking. This generation of young people right now, say 10 to 25, when they're grandpas, what are their good old days going to be like? What are they going to tell their grandkids?
They're going to remember. Well, let's start off. Good morning, Nick. How are you doing? Welcome to Poke the Hornet's Nest.
I'm so happy to be here. I can't think of any place I'd rather be right now than sitting across from you and enlightening our listeners about what's going on in the world today.
Well, I'm lucky to be here. I stayed at my brother's house last night, and he was letting me know that his energy bill from PG&E has only gone up to $450 a month, which is more than a 100% increase. But according to Sleepy and the Gang, inflation is under control. So I was frozen to death. So I'm happy to be here. Rocco, Lucy, thank you for letting us stay. But, what is the generation today going to look back on? They've got high crime, high unemployment, high inflation. They've got an absolute stellar leader at the controls at the White House. I mean, those are grand old days.
And they got
the Kardashians, too, so don't forget. They've got some real positive going.
And they've got the cell phones. You know, I'm thinking the Internet and a cell phone might be some of the worst things that happened to our society.
Well, the reality is they've actually done studies on it now, and that is actually starting to come out as probably a truism right there, is the advent of the Internet, instant gratification, not having to do the work. I mean, the AI now that's coming out. Kids aren't even have to write their own reports anymore. They're going to be able to just go and tap into chat GTP or GPT or whatever the hell it is, and they're going to say, hey, write a story about Nick Gardner, and it's 3 seconds, it's popped out. But yeah, that's what this modern generation is going to look back on as the good old days, whereas you and I, well, you were hanging out with Barney and Fred, and I was jumping bikes and climbing trees and breaking arms, and that was a great time.
I pioneered jumping bikes. I got my front teeth knocked out permanent when I was about 8. I was accident prone. I had to go get sewed up at least once a year.
Oh, you know, it's funny, as I was talking to my wife about this, we were having a great dinner last night. We went to that Queen tribute thing, and I gotta tell you, it was great. Those guys sounded really good. I mean, were they Freddie? No, but they were good. But we were talking about, you know, childhood memories, and I was telling her a story of when I used to live in Lompoc, down by Vandenberg Air Force Base. And Lompoc is about 9 miles from the actual ocean out at the coast. And I was, 10 years old, and I would tell my mom I'm just going to go out for a bike ride, and I'd make like a peanut butter sandwich, and then I would jump on my bike and I would ride on a busy 2-lane 9 miles to go to the beach by myself and drive back, and there was no cell phone. My mom had no idea where the heck I went, and I always got back when it was dark. Can you imagine a kid today not having a GPS tracker, a cell phone, a data plan, a logger? His mom or dad don't know to the second where he's at. I mean, that's what we brought up.
Well, you know, criminals were dealt with then. A pedophile, he didn't get to court. He got hung on the way.
Well, yeah, and, you know, in prison, those guys didn't do very well. Those people didn't do very well. But now it's, you know, 3 squares. They get sexual assignment surgeries, because that's the thing that I read in England. I think it was England, where a guy who had raped a number of women, he identified as a woman now, and so they put him in a woman's prison. Makes complete sense.
He knocked up one of the prisoners.
It makes complete sense. So that's getting back to your question. What are the kids today what are they going to look back at? What is their grand time? You know, they're going to be going, well, I had great video games. I had, I didn't go out much. We had COVID. COVID was a great, time to be home and hang with the family. So it's going to be interesting 20 years down the road to see how these kids, mature and what they look back at.
Listen to this, beep, 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 citing a February 16th congressional hearing. The Department of Defense report reveals that 77% of Americans in the above age group, which was like, 20 to 30, 18 to 30, were not physically qualified to enter the armed services.
Yeah.
77%, they can't get off their rear ends and get some exercise. A key factor is obesity, which hit nearly 42% of them. Meanwhile, a 2022 study by the Epoch Times, everybody should get the Epoch Times, found a link between government food assistance and a greater chance of being obese because they consume such crappy food.
Yes.
I imagine if they had to pay for their own food, they'd be a little bit more picky about what they eat.
Yeah, you know what? I will say that's probably not true, not to contradict you, but, I mean, there's plenty of overweight wealthy kids. It's the food today is made so addictive that, you know, you when we were growing up, we had a couple bags of chips. We had maybe barbecue, maybe sour cream and onion, and regular potato chips. And,
that's right.
And we were done. They have entire aisles now of potato chips and cookies and everything else. So I think, you know, it's the selection of food and the easy availability is what is one of the reasons that we're so overweight.
I saw some kind of a report. An Australian had moved in here to the United States,
yep.
And they asked him what the breakfast was like in Australia, comparatively speaking, to the United States. And he said, in Australia, we've got two or three kinds of cereals. He says, here in the United States, you've got a whole aisle, and they're all filled with sugar.
Yeah.
You know, theirs were healthy, and ours was all sugar.
Well, that was one of the things when I was living over in Holland for the 5 years is the Dutch, if you go to their stores, they've got like maybe two breakfasts, literally like a granola and maybe something else, maybe a cornflake. That's it. The Dutch are not this big American, you know, eggs and bacon and all this stuff. They usually have like a piece of bread with some meat or some peanut butter on it. But, yeah, for America, it's like, it's part of our culture to have a nice big breakfast. And you actually, back in the young days, we'd add sugar on top of our cereal.
Oh, that's right. You know, I think back, you know, I worked in the woods logging all my life and, I remember a logger's lunch. I really liked the logger's lunch. That was two cores and a dill pickle.
Two what?
Two cores.
Oh, two cores.
Two cores and a dill pickle.
The Rocky Mountain drink.
Heck yes. Hey, you know, let's talk a little bit about some local stuff. I'd like to play a clip with Janet Chandler at the supervisors' meeting. And then I'm going to read a little bit about it, and then we've got another clip. So you want to go with that clip? Liam, are you ready?
The right of people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I checked my Constitution before I came here today, and I could not find the part where it says that the Second Amendment is subject to reasonable regulation. My Constitution did not say that it was limited only to those weapons in effect and in existence in 1789. It did not say that military arms were banned. It didn't say anything about concealed or open carry. It didn't say that you could only use weapons that are used for hunting. It didn't say that you are only allowed to use a weapon as long as it does not offend or scare someone. It didn't say that only law enforcement gets to use weapons. It didn't say that regulations have to be in the public interest. It didn't say that I am allowed to have a gun only with government permission.
You know,
Declaration of Independence says that governments are instituted among men to protect the rights of the people. And rights are granted by our Creator, and they are absolute.
Amen. I'd like to recruit Janet to run against Mary Rickert. I mean, I think she's got She's way smarter and would do a lot better job for Shasta County. Now, I wrote this down, and then we're going to play another clip. I hitchhiked off of Janet's thoughts there. That was really a good comment, Janet. Thank you. The government does not grant rights. The government has no right to grant anything. In a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, the government has privileges granted to it by the people. The Constitution was written to protect the people's rights from the government and to tell the government what privileges it was granted by the people.
Yes.
I wrote that down.
I know that.
I copied it.
Well, you sounded very intelligent reading it. I got to be honest with you. It scared me a little there that you'd come up with that by yourself. No, you know what, that lady, Janet, well, first off, Nick, I got to say it was very impressive. You were about to speak when she said, excuse me. I thought that was – you really inserted that at the exact right moment. Pretty impressive. No, but she was – what part does a liberal Democrat moron not understand? Shall not be infringed, period. End of story. Not concealed, not open carry, shall not be infringed. And there are plenty of examples around the United States where there are open carry laws, where everything is there, and the crime is very low because the criminals know the person they're about to go and do a carjacking might have a gun. Just might. Those areas are not being cited when they go and they start talking about gun control. They try to pull out, you know, oh, well, we need to do this and that. They've got pretty steep gun control in Chicago, probably the most violent city in the United States. I'll bet you money, Nick, that the criminals don't go through background checks when they're buying their guns. Just thinking.
How about Mexico? Mexico, it's against the law to have weapons.
Well,
you can't have a gun in Mexico.
Nick, you are such a shallow human being. It's illegal unless you were Obama and Holder sending military-grade weapons down there. Then all of a sudden, it's legal.
It's a perfect example. If you outlaw guns, only outlaws will have guns.
I said it on the radio last time you and I were together. Is the Dutch, love the Dutch, lived there for 5 years, married to one. You're not allowed to have a gun unless you belong to a gun club. You must leave your gun at the gun club. You can only shoot your gun at the gun club. Every day. I read the Dutch newspaper every day. I'm telling you, at least almost once a day, somewhere in Holland, somebody's getting shot by a criminal. And a lot of it's kind of inner criminal, you know, liquidations and retributions. But, I mean, guns are still there. The only people that don't have them are the population.
I'm not sure if it's the United Kingdom or what country it is over there where they've got a pretty good handle and nobody does have guns, including the criminals, so they went to knives.
Oh, yeah, it was England. The criminals started stabbing people.
So they started restricting knives. You can't just walk in and buy a butcher knife.
Well, you know, one of the most well-armed countries on planet Earth is the Swiss. The Swiss, almost every house has an automatic gun that's loaded. Because
I think it's a requirement.
Well, yeah, because when you're a young male, you're required to go into the service. I think it's for 1 year, and when they release you, you keep your gun and you take it home because now you're part of the civilian defense force. If there was ever something that needed action, they can call every able-bodied male up and they generally have their own guns and they're loaded. Crime is almost non-existent relative to other Western nations because everybody knows if you go knocking through that door, you might find a loaded automatic weapon pointed right back at you.
Well, you know, I've said many times that United States should go to mandatory going into the service when you're 18 or you finish high school for at least a year. That would teach responsibility, a work ethic, respect.
Yeah.
And defense.
Well, and if we could do it in a way, and I'll say this, and I'll be greedy on this one. If they could do it in a way where kids who have athletic talent, I'm not here to carve out, but when you're in an athletic situation, and I was a baseball player, if I was to lose 1 year of not playing baseball, my opportunity to actually go play professional would have probably disappeared because you lose so much of the feel, the whatever. And so if there was a way, Nick, that you could do your service and still not be counted against you for future employment in a professional sport, whatever the sport, I think that wouldn't be a bad idea. It would give them civic responsibilities. It would teach them loyalty. It would teach them kind of the what it means to defend America.
Yeah, well, you know, that's if you wanted to build our country up to be as strong as it could. Maybe Donald Trump will get back in and he'll institute something like that. Maybe it should be, instead of rehab, you got to go into the Army. How's that?
Well,
let's send all these homeless to the Army and put them through boot camp.
Well, you know, what's funny is I believe years ago, if memory serves me correctly, that was actually one of the punishment options when you were kind of a low-level petty pain in the ass. The judge would give you the opportunity instead of prison to join the armed services. And
absolutely.
And, you know, I don't have any anecdotal evidence to say that that was bad, but I can tell you that was probably a good thing for those people. It probably got them on the straight and narrow and turned them into productive human beings in society.
Well, some of them. I had friends here in Reading, and they were drug abusers, too lazy to work, culls, you would call them. Mm-hmm. They went into the service. Some of them went to Vietnam. When they came home, they were still drug abusers, culls, you know. It didn't help them all, but I guess the effort was there.
Well, you know, you just mentioned a word in that thing there that I think is kind of the great equalizer, and that's Vietnam or Iraq or Fallujah or any of those things. What those folks saw and had to participate in, I try to reserve judgment on those folks because the stuff that they saw and did on a daily basis, they got up and they didn't know if – they literally would get up in the morning and not know if they were going to see the end of the day. I'm not defending them. I'm just saying I could see where having an alternative reality might have been beneficial. And when you get home, getting out of that alternative reality might have been very difficult.
Well, that's referring to drugs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I know somebody that's really functional. In fact, he's an engineer, and he went to Vietnam, and I'm sure he picked up a heroin habit there.
Yeah.
And he's still functional, but every once in a great while, he needs to go to a dry-out clinic, rehab, or whatever.
Yep.
And he's you wouldn't know it by talking to him. You know, I read something a while back. You know, you hear about the bad drug addicts, but you don't hear about the professionals that are drug addicts because they can afford their habit. They're not out breaking the law.
Well, we had a presentation, a number of years ago at the Board of Realtors, and it was about the fact they were trying to bring this drug treatment center into Reading, and I don't really know what happened because we never got a follow-up, but there was one down in Chico. And the lady who was doing the presentation, I'll never forget it because she said exactly that. She goes, if you were to sit outside of the center and see the kinds of people, and that was her words, kinds, you know, of people that were coming in, she goes, you're going to see professionals, suit and tie, dresses, high heels. She goes, drugs don't discriminate. If you get under their spell, you're under their spell.
Methadone clinic. Perfect.
Yeah, yeah. And she said that you would be surprised if you were just to sit there. And, she never told us the location, and that's not important. But she was saying that you would be surprised the number or the kind of people that were coming in, and they were professionals. They were people who had families and holding jobs. And she goes, it's an equal opportunity offender is what that is.
Hey, Liam, have you got time to play that second clip?
It's recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you holding this important hearing today. With the average price of gasoline nationwide currently sitting at $3.35 and the average hard rock mining project taking 7 to 10 years to go through the NEPA permitting process, clearly we must do more to streamline the permitting process and encourage responsible energy production. And I must just add that I'm not thrilled to hear the remarks from Mr. Squillace, excuse me, and the ranking member. It's coming, whether people like it or not. The Green New Deal, wind, solar, it's coming whether people like it or not. We're not even going to allow the markets to decide. The markets were deciding with fossil fuels. And, it was a reliable and efficient energy source. And then the federal government came in and shut them down and heavily subsidized wind and solar, so-called renewables that are not renewable. And now we hear it's coming whether people like it or not. You're going to learn to like it because the federal government is going to put the restrictions and regulations to force you to have it. And you're going to like it whether you whether you want to or not. Praise the Lord.
I wanted to
look,
get back
I'm
to
proud
that.
To support both of these well-crafted bills.
I wanted to get back to that before we got too far away from Janet Chandler and what she said. Where did it say in the Constitution that the government can shove this down our throats? Whether you like it or not.
Well, and more than that is it's a corrupt actual scam. It's a complete scam on humanity that this whole Green Deal is happening and it's being force-fed to us. I mean, here locally, as you know, we talked about it, the windmill situation. The locals have voted, we don't want it. We don't need it. It's a waste. It's a boondoggle. It's a Solyndra all over again. And yet the state of California is trying to tell us. So tell us that we have to do it. No matter what we want, our government's going to force it on us. And guys, I'm telling you, we have to stand up because now it's the windmills. The next one's going to be, well, you know, it's in your best interest that you have to give up your guns. Now you people are going to say that's a stretch.
Whether you like it or not.
Whether you like it, because it's for the greater good. And you and I actually started our whole radio stuff together by you having me on about real estate and green energy, and then it became green energy in general. It is the largest scam in the world. It does not make money. It does not produce. It is a disaster. The energy needed to build a windmill, a solar system, a solar panel, far exceeds what it's going to generate in the life of its service.
You're so negative about this. Listen, look at all the good things the government has forced on us that they've done good. Look at the Department of Education.
Beautiful. Great. I okay,
how about transportation? The
double
Department
check.
Of Transportation. Yep. You've got to be able to come up with a couple.
Yeah.
Foreign policy.
Oh, are you kidding me?
They got us in who?
Well, I'm telling you. I mean, they are so...
NATO! Look at how they're helping us. We need to listen to the government.
Yes. They've been right everywhere along the... COVID. They did such a good job on COVID. They forced us into our houses. They put masks on us. They turned neighbor against neighbor. The government has always been right. So let's remember that.
This is a quote from Donald Trump. I will withdraw from the WHO, which stands for We Hide Outbreaks.
Well, and you know, I was reading an article the other day about NATO, and NATO was set up as a defensive to the Russian old system. It was set up as a defensive force that was never supposed to be used as an offensive force, and yet we Americans have managed to get NATO into so many sticky wickets being offensive instead of us just being there. And at this juncture with the old Soviet satellites now being part of NATO, why do we still have NATO? Because our government told us that's good for us.
That's right.
Yes.
You know, and we're in a war right now. In effect, we're fighting Russia in Ukraine.
Oh, absolutely.
I've got one here by Vidman. Where's? Oh, here it is, right here, August 22nd. Vidman. You remember General Vidman?
General Vidman.
He
no.
was a little gay-looking guy that's real important. I think he's got about 4 stars on his collar. Operating as CEO of Trident Support, gave a presentation to Ukraine on Ukraine Weapons System Sustainment Center to help the country address problems with repairing and maintaining the equipment that poured into Ukraine from the West since Russia invaded. Report said he is pitching a defense contract to the Ukrainian government to the tune of $12 million, which will likely come from U.S. taxpayers to operate and repair military equipment being used in the war. So we're going to give the Ukraine money to hire us back at $12 million to fix the equipment that we give them to fight Russia.
Well, the guy's a complete idiot. And then here's why, Nick, because we have sent over a ton of military equipment. What the Ukrainians did is they took the equipment. They actually got the maintenance done by selling it to Russia and to China. They don't even need to maintain the equipment. They just pass it on and pocket the money.
And I don't know why they just can't. If a tank breaks, maybe they could just get one that we left in Afghanistan.
I'm sure that
they
that is an
option.
They could
just run it up the road to
there
them.
You go.
I don't know. We're getting pretty close to a break. We've got Kevin Cry in the house, Supervisor Kevin Cry, and he's going to chat a little bit after the break.
That's good.
Are you ready to break, Liam? Okay.
We'll be back.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243 CT Reading.
Here's a little jingle from the Thule Kids.
You can play it, you can pause it, you can skip it, you can stop it with a hop. When the hopper takes over your commercial, the hop with the hop.
Thank you for calling B&T Satellite at 241-3474. That's 241-DISH. Hi, this is Doug Thule. Are you missing Newsmax? Call me because I make TV easy and I can get it back for you. My phone number is 241-3474. In case you didn't hear that, that's 530-241-3474. Or visit us at 1007 Dana Drive, Redding, California. Check us out on the internet at btsatellite.com. Shasta County's only DISH Premier retailer. Restrictions apply. Call for details.
100 years ago, Simpson University began with the promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with the promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Building on our foundational promise to educate ministers and missionaries, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
On display now at Turtle Bay Museum, Honor, Courage, Commitment, Marine Corps Art, 1975 through 2018, featuring 36 art pieces created by Marine combat artists who documented their own experience in times of war and peace. This traveling museum exhibition is sponsored by the Marine Corps Heritage Foundation from the National Museum of the Marine Corps. Open now through April 30th. Honor, Courage, Commitment, Marine Corps Art at Turtle Bay Museum. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
We call it progress, but I just don't know. And Grandpa, let's wander back into the past that paints me the picture of long ago.
Grandpa, here's the good old days when I joined the gang and I got my teeth knocked out, so I had a grill made and I was walking around. The chicks were chasing me. I was smoking dope. Man, those were good days, son.
Yes, yes. And I was getting my money from the government and it was great. I had universal basic income. I had really crappy health care. Those were good old days.
Oh, yeah. And my iPhone was paid for.
Yes, by Obama.
Let me bring up one thing before Kevin gets started here. Lake Shasta came up only 8 feet after all that rain and snow. You know, it only rained and snowed for 3 days. February was a pretty dry month.
But it's going to come up. I have a feeling that our snowpack is going to bring Shasta up a bit as the spring starts to thaw.
Well, the headline was kind of disappointing. It led you to believe that we had a real wet month, and it didn't come up much. And it didn't rain all month. Kevin, good morning.
Morning, sir. How you doing?
As good as I can with a little bit I got left to work with. It's fading like my eyesight.
He has a little bit, so let's run with it while we got time, Kevin.
No, I appreciate you guys having me on. I just wanted to come on and make a couple quick, I wouldn't say necessarily announcements, but just plugs, selfless plugs for my show that's going to start next week at 8 a.m. right here. You, of course, and Doug and I will go opposite weeks. I'm excited about that.
Yes.
And the other is...
We can come in and take over your show and just not let you talk, but that's up to you.
Well, what's exciting about this for me is now that I'm somewhat getting settled as a supervisor, I had said during the campaign that I wanted to start it back up, and this is as good a time as any because I want to be that much more accessible to voters, especially in District 1. And just residents in Shasta County, and this give everyone an opportunity to call in, ask some questions, and then actually talk about things that really, really matter to people.
Let me ask you something. Did you realize that this was going to be such a time-consuming job, being a supervisor?
You know, I knew it was going to be very time-consuming. I knew it would be a massive four-year commitment, also for my family, but I didn't know the direction and how. And in which ways, you know, one thing I've learned is our board chair sets the agenda. So our board chair puts on there, as well as staff, of what we're going to be talking about. So that was one of the things for me. I want to spend a lot more time in the vertical of homelessness and mental health. And I've got to spend very little time compared to what I thought I would be spending. I'm still going out to MLK Park on Saturdays, but there's definitely some topics and some things I want to address and get working on, and it's just hasn't been the focus. So,
well, your show will be a good opportunity to bring some of those out to people's attentions.
Yeah, absolutely, and also give a voice to some people who I think have some really great ideas across the state and across the country. I'll definitely have a couple guests next week that are doing some pretty amazing programs or have been a part of some pretty amazing programs across the country. So fitting it all in every other week is going to be tough. But so that brings me to my next point. On March 16th, which is a Thursday, I'm going to do a town hall roundtable for people that live within District 1. So you have to live within District 1, and that will be at – I don't know if we've set the time for 6 or 6:30 yet. I'll talk more about that next week, and I'll put it on social media. But it's going to be at Lit From Within, 1475 Placer, Suite D, right downtown in District 1. And that's going to be for roughly – I think we're going to set it at about 100, 115 people are going to be able to attend. And I floated the idea in front of just a few people. So we're already looking at how we're going to register for that. Are we just going to do it at the door? The most important thing for me is, like, everyone's welcome. That's a voter of District 1. So whatever your political leanings are, it's going to be an opportunity to just discuss some things openly, civilly, and get people kind of rowing on in the same direction in terms of being able to ask questions and having some of that access, and not in the format of a supervisor meeting where you've got 3 minutes. And if we want to stay on one topic longer, we'll stay on one topic longer. So I've talked to quite a few people in District 1 that are really excited about it, and they're definitely inviting their neighbors from very vast political leanings. And that's what I'm excited about, is bringing people together. I haven't had the opportunity really to sit and just do that since the actual campaign season in roughly October.
We're certainly divided, that's for sure.
We're not coming any closer together. So this is going to just give me an opportunity to connect with voters and then people and hearing what their issues are. And it doesn't mean we're all going to agree when we leave.
Sure.
But at least we're going to get to hear each other. And I think that's the most important thing, is hearing one another.
Well, that's the basis of America. America was based on the opportunity, not the result. And you should have, whether you're black, white, gay, straight, it doesn't matter, the same opportunity to be successful. But that doesn't mean you're going to end at the same result. Some are going to succeed and some are going to fail. So when you have your meetings, it's not designed that everybody's going to be in agreement when they're done, but at least they got to put out their point of view.
Yeah, well, and people confuse fair with equal.
Yes.
I mean, and you know, and that's a debate in of itself that just cracks me up, because fair and equal are, you know, it's not the same thing.
No. No, equal is that opportunity. Fair is the outcome. It's fair that everybody got the same result, but equal is like you have the same rules, same baseline. Same playing field, and you can make of it what you want. Fair is like, well, you know, that's a subjective, Kevin, the fact you won, it's not really fair to the guy who lost. You know, that's the difference.
Exactly. So what I would say is, if people want to email me some show ideas or some just thoughts in general, email me at kevin@votekevincry.com. I've kept that account open. So kevin@votekevincry.com. Send me some show ideas or send me some questions that you want covered at the town hall roundtable. I really wouldn't call it a town hall per se because I have limited number of seats, and it's not going to be for the entire town. It's going to be just for District 1, so we can call it a District 1 roundtable, I guess.
Mini supervisor meeting.
Well, yeah, it's there's obviously nothing getting voted on, but it's a chance for people to maybe get out from behind a screen and sending emails or leaving voicemails, and if they want to come and have a discussion about things. And believe me, I'm all for emails, but every supervisor, you know, current, past, present, etc., will tell you we get hundreds. And I will speak for myself. I read them all. I don't read them all within the first 10 minutes they come in. Sometimes something will come in and I'll respond to it immediately, but I've got literally like 85 emails that came in before it that I just didn't look down and didn't got out of a meeting, and the first one that pops up I answer. So.
Well, I've got a marketing angle. Everybody knows what TED Talks is. Why don't you call this Kev Talks?
Yeah. What are you going to call your show?
I don't know. I'm still, you know, I'm not really, I haven't put a lot of thought into that, Nick. I mean, because I'm not trying to monetize it, so there's no kind of marketing angle that's important. I mean, if it was at the noon hour, I'd call it the soup hour.
There you go.
And we'd have soup.
Well, you have a bright future because you're not putting a lot of thought into it. That would describe Nick's and my show.
Well, what I've really said is I really want to just be accessible to people. And now what I've learned is I wouldn't say just learn, but what I know is that, you know, we all have the same amount of hours in the day, and squeezing as much out of those is becoming tougher and tougher. So I think scheduling it, and that's the one thing I think I've become a lot better about in the last 2 or 3 years. I've become like a schedule Nazi, or not a schedule Nazi. That's like with my kids, but a schedule ninja. Like, I've really been good at being able to squeeze as much time out of the day.
I've got a couple questions I wanted to ask you. One, you guys voted the supervisors to disband the Opportunity Center.
Heartbreaking.
Well, to me, this is the epitome of the bureaucracy taking all the funds that were meant for a good cause.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for agreeing with me on that.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to run across quite a bit of that.
Yeah, well, here's what I can say about the Opportunity Center. When I spoke in, I believe it was December, might have been the last meeting that the prior board had, and I asked them to kind of kick that, you know, punt and give it an opportunity. And Laura Birch and her team had really looked into it, but there was some catastrophic mistakes made in the last 7 or 8 years, especially right after when Jane Work left, that led to the closing of its doors. And it's really unfortunate because the people that need it most are the ones that are going to suffer.
That's right, absolutely.
So I'll tell you, I'm working with a couple other small businesses trying to see if we can't get some placements for a couple individuals that – and when I say placements, it's going to be – I mean, it's not going to be piecework. It's not going to be – it's a normal job. It's just a regular job. You're paid like everybody else. There's no facilitator. There's no county subsidy. There's nothing. It's like, hey, here's an employee. Can they do this job? And that's small, but that's why I've encouraged a lot of other business owners, if they have a spot possibly on their staff that may be able to hire. And I've always said, you know, vets and then, of course, individuals with developmental disabilities that need that work. Because I still say there's nothing more gratifying than somebody getting up every day, going to work, putting money in their pocket, and paying their own way.
Absolutely. I've worked at places where they hired them. One was the Red Lion. They had their own.
That was my first job in high school. Well, outside of officiating youth sports. But, yeah, I worked as a bellman for Red Lion.
Well, they had the cleanup crew, and they had their own wing at the Red Lion, and that's what they cleaned up every day. And then Crown Motors had them down there washing cars and things like that.
Yep.
And it makes them feel worthwhile. Yeah, also.
And I think it makes everybody. I think that's the crux of a lot of the issues we have is when people work, and it doesn't matter what you're doing. I mean, I have such an admiration for anybody that goes to work, tired or not, shows up on time, puts in their effort, and goes home. And, you know, I just do. And, you know, growing up in the 80s and early 90s, it was all about go to college. You know, you don't want to push a broom the rest of your life. And it's like, you know what? That narrative has led to where we are now, is where people want to sit on their butt and do nothing, expect to get paid for. I'll tell you that thing in Oregon with that $1,000 a month, that's scary stuff.
Oh, yeah, and they're doing it down here in a couple spots. But
sorry, I know we're going.
No, we're fine. Another thing about that, what I read in the paper, the main focus was, don't worry, we're going to be able to place these county workers someplace else. That was a priority.
You talking about the individuals that work for the county that are support specialists?
Yes.
For the opportunity
center?
Okay.
And my thoughts are, you know, basically your business went belly up. Go find another job.
Yeah, I can't speak to that. That's more of an HR thing. And
yes.
That's a really great political answer to say I don't have a statement on that. I can tell you this.
Yeah, that is kind of putting you on the spot.
Yeah, well, here's what I know. Working with Laura Birch now for a little over 2 months, she's phenomenal at what she does. She has a heart of gold. She cares, but she's also able to make tough decisions about how our taxpayer dollars are spent, and I appreciate that. I know there's a lot that the analysts are looking into. They've actually created a new department to actually look over contracts and see what's working and what's not, and I applaud that. Applaud that.
One of the things that, you know, Nick touched on it, but right now, currently, the largest employer in the world is the United States government, and over 9 million people are on our dole. I'm paying for it. You're paying for it. So it has always been this kind of, if you get to a job with the government, you're never going to lose your job. I think it's time we start, and I know I'm not putting you on the spot. I'm just saying I don't think it's a bad thing if we start losing some jobs and the government and putting those people back into the private sector where you actually have to give customer service. You have to be nice. You have to do your job. And I'm not here to beat on them. I'm just saying the government only goes bloat. It never goes smaller. So if we can start actually turning the ship a little bit, I think there's benefits in that.
Well, you look at, I mean, is our quality of life going up? I mean, are things cheaper? Are things safer? Are the roads better? But yet we're growing government. You know, but and not just not Shasta County specifically, but just in general. I mean, the IRS, we're going to have tens of thousands of new agents out there
if they get their way.
I mean, so.
And I'll be the first to say, we had a presentation from the city manager of Shasta Lake, and I wish I remembered her name. Really neat lady, gave a good presentation. But at the end of it, we were able to give some comments. And Steve, the building department head out there, the dude is phenomenal. He's awesome. He has one thing that most government agencies don't have, common sense. You actually, if you need him, he'll come look. He'll go, okay, let's figure out how. And, I mean, just a gem. In the government world is the building inspector, builder, department guy, Steve. I think it's – I want to say Steve Lay. That's not right. But Steve out there in Shasta Lake City. So I'm willing to give compliments where it's due.
Oh, yeah.
And that dude's just – he's phenomenal. So they're doing something right up there.
Well, you know, there's such a thing as book smart with no common sense.
Yeah.
And that's what we get an awful lot of the time, these people with – I've said people – a lot of educated people aren't educated. Good test takers.
I'll tell you what, Dr. Danuka put something on Facebook the other day just about IQ and not a social score as it relates to banking and things like that. But it was – he had a really great post on there about emotional and social intelligence as well as IQ and just broke down some facts. It was great. I mean, I would encourage you to check it out.
And what a wonderful person he is.
Dr. Danuka?
Yes.
Yeah. I've spent very little time with him, but every time I've had a chance to sit and talk with him, he seems very, very pro Shasta County and very pro citizen, pro business.
Well, you know, hitting on the education, I mean, I think we could arguably say that we are living in the most educated time in human history. I mean, no matter where you are in the world, Canada, Australia, Europe, Asia, everything is about education, education. You got to get your kids to college. And we are doing the dumbest things that the world will ever see.
Oh. Yeah.
So being book smart doesn't necessarily translate into actually being smart. But I mean, but these folks are convinced of their greatness. I mean, they get out of college, they think they should get a $100,000 office job with a window overlooking the Sacramento River, and they look down at people who push brooms.
And they work 4-day work weeks remotely.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you made the comment, Nick, you know, just having an education doesn't necessarily mean that you're smart.
Yeah. You know, and you spoke something too about people coming into the workforce. I think now more than ever, like the culture, you know, and I think the culture is where people want to be a part of. I mean, I know I have employees that definitely could make more money elsewhere, but I think we have a really great culture. Like we have a really great mission, what we do. And I think that's what's important. I think a lot of people have kind of reassessed what's important to them the last couple of years. And I've said it multiple times. You spend the majority of your life in bed and at work. So you better have a comfortable bed and you better enjoy where you work, because the majority of your life is going to be spent in those two places.
Yep. If you enjoy your job, that's worth a few bucks an hour.
Yeah. Oh, easily. Easily. And yeah, absolutely. Not just enjoy it, but then you take another step and believe in it. And that's one thing I will say at the county. We have some great, great people who do love their job, who are there. And I don't expect them to be there because they've got this huge mission in their heart to work for, you know, a certain vertical within the county and give their life to it. I mean, they're there to get paid, then go spend time with their toys, their boats, their fishing rods, their kids, whatever. I don't expect people to give their life, not at all of that. But, you know, you have to do a great job while you're there. And so I enjoy trying to catch people doing great things and then trying to point it out.
I'd like to ask you about a rumor I heard. I heard that Ninja Coalition was buying the old movies theater down there off of Parkview.
We had it in escrow. And once it was broken into and became basically a homeless encampment at the time, I don't know if they've cleaned it out since, but we pulled out. They had stripped all the wires. They were stripping all the wires out of the building. They'd used the restrooms, and there's no plumbing. You'd walk in and it smelled like an outhouse.
Oh wow.
And that was 2 months ago. And that would have been one of the coolest facilities, I think, north of Sacramento and south of Portland, because we were going to make possibly one or two indoor pickleball courts, but for sure a rock wall, ninja gym, a learning lab with virtual reality. It was going to be awesome. But
and that's not
That's absolutely off the table.
Well,
in that
that's
location.
Too bad.
Yeah.
You know, I came up with an idea. Maybe you'd plant in the right heads. We should start a pickleball tournament for Northern California and Southern Oregon here in Redding.
Yeah,
that would really bring in older people, and older people have money to spend.
Yeah, there's I know there's a couple different groups in Redding trying to work on some different pickleball opportunities, whether they be indoor or outdoor, but facilities. I think bringing in outside people, and that's one of the things I know James Mazzotta and Nigel Skeet are really working on. In terms of from a tourism standpoint and what they're doing with the Shasta County Chamber of Commerce, because there's nothing better than having people come here, spend their money, and leave.
Yes.
So we get that tax revenue, but we don't have to facilitate their kids in schools or any other stuff.
They could leave their daughters if they want to.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Nigel's daughters, man, they're a handful, but they're great kids.
Now, pickleball. It's funny, as you guys were, I didn't even know that thing existed till about a year ago when a friend of mine goes, "Oh, I play pickleball every week." I go, "What the hell is pickleball?" So, yeah, there you go, Nick.
I've never seen it, but I know it's popular. Yeah. I've walked by the courts. And
Where are the courts at?
Well, they've got some over at Kids Kingdom over there. They had an outdoor hockey rink out there that they converted into pickleball courts.
Oh.
They're going to put some down at South City Park.
Wow.
I go to Ashland twice a year to see my rheumatologist, and it's big up in Ashland.
Oh, maybe I need to get out of my turtle shell and start going and seeing some of this stuff.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, when you live on the horse sanctuary, you're feeding 200 horses every weekend. It's, you know, you eat up your mornings before you get the chance to go do anything else.
Feeding these emergency meat supply.
Don't let my wife hear that.
200 horses?
240 wild beasts. There's, I think, around 220 horses and about 20, maybe a little over 20 wild burros. They have a saddle string that they used to do the rides on pre-COVID. But yeah, it's the oldest wild, it's the oldest horse sanctuary in the United States. I think it's 44 years this year, and it's 4,000 acres. My wife is supposed to be on with Carl Bott on Tuesday just to discuss the Wild Horse Sanctuary, but it's truly a gem in the North State. Is people don't know about it. It's right there at the bottom of the hill at when you come down Wilson Hill Road, and you look to the right. Think about looking about, I'm going to guess, 4 miles, and that's all for wild horses.
Wow.
Yeah.
pretty amazing.
It is pretty cool. So I don't get a chance to get out and do real things like real people. I'm fixing stuff and old tractors and building stuff and because it never stops breaking. So, Kevin, I mean, we've got about 5 minutes left, and since you've been here for 30 minutes, let's make sure.
Yeah,
so,
my 3 minute plug.
Too. No, that's all right.
Well, but this is what I want though for my District 1 stuff on Thursday on the 16th is just sitting around talking to individuals, maybe a little bit more structure.
Yeah,
but still,
don't invite us.
Yeah. Well, Nick's a District 1 guy, so Nick, I expect Nick to be there front and center with his notepad. And
you're gonna regret that request. You're gonna really regret it.
You know, I went to the homeless. Restart Reading down at the Civic Auditorium Friday. It was from 8 till about 11:30.
Yeah.
Oh, talk about a love fest for liberals. But, you know, I noticed a few things. One thing Jonathan Anderson said that really caught my attention, the police department is now a social services agency.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I don't know. Well, Chief Schiller was sitting there and he didn't say anything. But I noticed that they had a question and answer, but Jonathan took the questions and asked them. They took them online, and it got me to thinking, you know, the League of Women's Voters, Jonathan Anderson, all them liberals, they want to be in control of the questions also.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. But at the end, they let the audience ask, I think it's about 5 questions, maybe 6, and
yeah.
Guess who got to ask one?
Oh, geez.
And they touched on fentanyl and drug overdoses and homeless, and it was an informative forum. But I asked him, I said, do you suppose if they cut down or if they closed the borders, it would cut down on the supply of fentanyl? And the guy, Tom Wolf, he says, no, those people coming across the borders aren't bringing fentanyl in. And what got me is everybody clapped.
At your remark or your question or his comment?
His answer.
Well, there you go. You can tell who was in the audience that day.
This is the thing for me, and I applaud anybody who's trying to have the conversation or move some things forward. But we have people in this community that have worked in this vertical 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Made a good career out of it.
And So Jonathan Anderson and I are going to meet actually this week because I asked him point blank. I said, so what are the actionable items? What are the next steps? What did we learn this week that we didn't already know? And what are we doing? And that's my show is going to have a lot about that because, again, there is nothing positive about somebody sleeping underneath an awning right when it's snowing in Reading. Like, I don't care what you've done.
On cold cement.
Yeah, I don't care what you've done in your life. I don't care what heinous acts you might have committed or if you're there because you lost a job. Like, I don't care. I don't want you sleeping on cold cement. There's nothing humane about that.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So for me, when I saw that and the paradigm shift for me is now that I'm a sitting supervisor, I actually have a platform and I actually have some say to a degree of how we can make some changes.
Yeah.
And I've just been chomping at the bit to start publicly tackling some of these things, but I've been getting my ducks in a row of what I see these next steps need to be. And I'm about 30 to 45 days still out of what I want to do and having everything secure for that. But when I do, I'm going to be vocal about it.
Well, I mean, now, you know, being in your position, you've got the access to the players. When you're outside, you don't always get to know, you know, person A, person B. You might only know A, but you don't know all these other people that might be putting in. And now that you're on the inside, you're an insider now, you get to meet these other forces and people that are involved. And so hopefully there is some real change because we have, as a country, spent, I would argue, trillions of dollars.
Yeah.
And homelessness has only gotten worse.
I wonder how much of that trillions of dollars went to the bureaucracy.
Oh, most of it.
Yeah.
Money's not getting where we want it to go.
Or where you think you give it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing for me is when I worked at the Salvation Army after college and I understood where in Red Cross, UNICEF, Salvation Army, and others. And when
30
you,
seconds. So
and,
let's
when,
go.
And when you give money, how much of that actually gets to the cause? That's why I've always been a huge Salvation Army proponent because just about the majority of that dollar, like 90 some cents, goes to the problem. And that's what it needs.
Thanks for coming in, Kevin. We enjoyed the conversation.
Good luck next week, sir.
Thank you, guys. It's a tough act to follow, but thank you.
So good. So good. I got to hear. Oh, I feel nice. The sugar is fine.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.